They took some time choosing their seats at the perilous table. Probably everyone had the same reason, but no one said it out loud. But it was really a rather nasty choice. One could hardly bear to sit all night next to those three terrible, hairy objects, which, if not dead, were certainly not alive in the ordinary sense. On the other hand, to sit at the far end so that you would see them less and less as the night grew darker and wouldn't know if they were moving and perhaps wouldn't see them at all by about 2 o'clock, no, it was not to be thought of. So they sauntered round and round the table, saying, "What about here?" And, "Or perhaps a bit further on?" Or, "Why not on this side?" Till at last they settled down somewhere about the middle, but nearer to the sleepers than to the other end. It was about 10 by now, and almost dark. Those strange new constellations burned in the east. Lucy would have liked it better if they had been the leopard and the ship, and other old friends of the Narnian sky. They wrapped themselves in their sea cloaks, and sat still and waited. At first there was some attempt at talk, but it didn't come to much. And they sat, and sat. And all the time they heard the waves breaking on the beach. After hours that seemed like ages, there came a moment when they all knew that they had been dozing a moment before, but were all suddenly wide awake. The stars were all in quite different positions from those they had last noticed. The sky was very black, except for the faintest possible greyness in the east. They were cold, though thirsty and stiff, and none of them spoke, because now at last something was happening. Before them, beyond the pillars, there was the slope of a low hill, and now a door opened in the hillside, and light appeared in the doorway, and a figure came out, and the door shut behind it. The figure carried a light, and this light was really all that they could see distinctly. It came slowly, nearer and nearer, till at last it stood right at the table opposite to them. Now they could see that it was a tall girl, dressed in a single long garment of clear blue, which left her arms bare. She was bareheaded, and her yellow hair hung down her back, and when they looked at her, they thought that they had never before known what beauty meant. The light which she had been carrying was a tall candle in a silver candlestick, which she now set upon the table. If there had been any wind off the sea earlier in the night, it must have died down by now, for the flame of the candle burned as straight and still as if it were in a room with the window shut and the curtains drawn. Gold and silver on the table shone in its light. Lucy now noticed something lying lengthwise on the table, which had escaped her attention before. It was a knife of stone, sharp as steel, a cruel-looking, ancient-looking thing. No one had yet spoken a word. Then, Rip-Cheep first and Caspian next, they all rose to their feet, because they felt that she was a great lady. "Travellers, who have come from far to Aslan's table," said the girl, "why do you not eat and drink?"
Madam, said Caspian, "we feared the food because we thought it had cast our friends into an enchanted sleep."
"They have never tasted it," she said.
"Please," said Lucy, "what happened to them?"
7 years ago, said the girl, "they came here in a ship, whose sails were rags, and her timbers ready to fall apart. There were a few others with them, sailors, and when they came to this table, one said, 'Here is the good place. Let us set sail and reef sail, and row no longer, but sit down and end our days in peace.' And the second said, 'No, let us re-embark and sail for Narnia and the west. It may be that Miraz is dead.' But the third, who was a very masterful man, leapt up and said, 'No, by heaven, we are men, and Telmarines, not brutes. What should we do but seek adventure after adventure?
We have not long to live, in any event. Let us spend what is left in seeking the unpeopled world behind the sunrise.
And as they quarrelled, he caught up the knife of stone which lies there on the table, and would have fought with his comrades. But it is a thing not right for him to touch. And as his fingers closed upon the hilt, deep sleep fell upon all the three. Until the enchantment is undone, they will never wake.
"What is this knife of stone?" asked Eustace.
"Do none of you know it?" said the girl.
"I think," said Lucy, "I've seen something like it before. It was a knife like it that the White Witch used when she killed Aslan at the stone table long ago."
"It was the same," said the girl, "and it was brought here to be kept in honour while the world lasts."
Edmund, who had been looking more and more uncomfortable for the last few minutes, now spoke. "Look here," he said. "I hope I'm not a coward about eating this food, I mean, and I'm sure I don't mean to be rude, but we have had a lot of queer adventures on this voyage of ours, and things aren't always what they seem. When I look in your face, I can't help believing all you say. But then that's just what might happen with a witch, too. How are we to know you're a friend?"
"You can't know," said the girl. "You can only believe or not."
After a moment's pause, Weepy Cheep's small voice was heard.
"Sire," he said to Caspian, "of your courtesy, fill my cup with wine from that flagon. It is too big for me to lift. I will drink to the lady."
Caspian obeyed, and the mouse, standing on the table, held up a golden cup between its tiny paws and said,
"Lady, I pledge you."
Then it fell to on Cold Peacock, and in a short while everyone else followed its example. All were very hungry, and the meal, if not quite what you wanted for a very early breakfast, was excellent as a very late supper.
"Why is it called Aslan's table?" asked Lucy presently. "It is set here by his bidding," said the girl, "for those who come so far. Some call this island the world's end, for though you can sail further, this is the beginning of the end."
"But how does the food keep?" asked the practical Eustace.
"It is eaten and renewed every day," said the girl. "This you will see."
"And what are we to do about the sleepers?" asked Caspian. "In the world from which my friends come," here he nodded at Eustace and the Pevenses, "they have a story of a prince or a king coming to a castle where all the people lay in an enchanted sleep. In that story, he could not dissolve the enchantment until he had kissed the princess."
"But here," said the girl, "it is different. Here he cannot kiss the princess till he has dissolved the enchantment."
"Then," said Caspian, "in the name of Aslan, show me how to set about that work at once."
"My father will teach you that," said the girl.
"Your father?" said everyone. "Who is he, and where?"
"Look," said the girl, turning round and pointing at the door in the hillside. They could see it more easily now, for while they had been talking, the stars had grown fainter, and great gaps of white light were appearing in the greyness of the eastern sky.